This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 104, for October 18th, 2007. But first, a quick plug for ModShop.net, the new website from the editors of our sister magazine, Maximum PC. ModShop is the ultimate community resource for PC modders of all experience levels, and home to our monthly hardware deathmatch, where you can pit your best rig against all comers in a gladiator-style battle to win your share of the $2,000 monthly prize pool. Folks who have never picked up a Dremel can check out the amazing work and help to determine the winner of the monthly contest by voting in battles. Check out www.modshop.net today. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and today on the podcast we have our very busy EIC, Kristen Salvatore.
She
will be smiling and nodding throughout this entire podcast, pretending to care what we're talking about, as she as she ensures that the magazine will actually come out next month. Actually talking and saying something hopefully insightful is our senior editor, Logan Decker.
Hi, everybody.
That wasn't very insightful at all.
You don't say.
Can Backspace columnist Gary Whitta do better?
I'm also extremely busy, but I'm not going to let the podcast suffer as a result.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
You're a trooper, guys. So, and we've also got Norm Chan, our senior executive intern and shooter columnist.
I hate the Peggle Rabbit so much.
That was insightful.
You
that,
back.
That's a glimpse into Norm's psyche. I guess I don't know how you have time to play Peggle with Orange Box, sucking up all of your time, looking at your stats on how much time you and Gaz in particular have been spending in those games is dizzying.
Oh, we just leave it on the background minimized, and Steam just counts that as game time.
Gaz, you just looked at your hours in Team Fortress 2. What was the number?
You know, maybe it's for the best, but I can't actually get into my control panel. Oh, no, well, here it is. Oh. I don't even want to say it.
Say it?
Come on, let's
we
see
can,
it.
We I'm can not, all see it, Gaz. Don't make me go in there.
I'm not going to say it.
I'm going to have to
come on.
I'm going to have to start up Steam, go in there, and look at the number just for myself.
Listen, in all seriousness, I don't want the amount of time I've been playing that game being broadcast.
Okay.
I mentioned it before the podcast, but I don't want it going out on the air. It's just too bad. It's too awful. I'm ashamed of it.
You know what? This is part of the pussification of America.
That was one of the best emails we've received in a long time. About what was that regarding about Logan? About you not changing your tire?
Yeah.
It was because I called AAA too many times. They're going to cut me off. and this guy says, I can understand for like locking your keys in your car, but you call them to change your tires? This is part of the pussification of America. You're a man.
They don't know Logan.
You're a man. This is pussification.
Leave Logan alone. Logan can change his video cards. He doesn't have to, and he can change his CPU. He doesn't need to change tires. Other people can do that for him. He can change their
Who's
CPU.
Who's got the time?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't want Logan to break a nail either. So.
Absolutely not. Or I'm expensing it.
All right. So is there an achievement in Orange Box for wasting your life playing the game?
No, that's an anti-achievement.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is the achievement for carrying the gnome all the way through the game. So I figured there's got to be a larger one for wasting that much of your life trying to get every achievement.
That just makes me love them all more. I think that's
let's talk about that. So
have you seen the gnome?
Yes, there's a little gnome statue figurine that's in the first level of episode 2, and if you check the achievements list, there's an achievement called. I'm not sure what it's called.
It's called Little Rocket Man. Send the garden gnome into space.
Yeah, and the only way you can send him into space, the only access port to space is there's a rocket ship.
Don't ruin anything.
Well,
an opportunity to send something into space in the end of the game.
Yes, but it's at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So in order to get the gnome into that vehicle, you have to physically carry it throughout the entire game while surviving the game. That is, I guess, what you would call an achievement.
I think it's debatable if you can call that an achievement so much as a monument to having too much time on your hands.
It sounds achievey to me.
When I think of something I've achieved, I don't know if I would, you know, throw that into to like my life's achievements under that category. But there are some screenshots we found on Dig.
What about that thing you do with women's underwear?
That's definitely an achievement.
Okay.
Yeah, I certainly achieved that. So we found a link on Dig. This is kfj.f2s.com, whatever the hell that means. I guess it's somebody's blog where he has taken screenshots of progressing all the way through Half-Life 2 Episode 2 with this gnome, and you know, he takes screenshots of the gnome in different, you know, every scene, or not every scene, but a lot of them. If you haven't played it yet, you probably don't want to play it. You don't want to look at this because it is a little bit spoilery, but pretty hilarious just to see the gnome in all these settings. He's very out of place, in a battle with Striders. But
will he get me discounts on airfare?
That's a valid question. I don't have an answer for you.
He's not like the Travelocity gnome?
We can't all be like the Travelocity gnome.
Well, that sucks.
Those are good commercials, I have to say.
I feel like people have been a little bit hard on episode 2 last week. So,
because
I just finally finished it a couple of nights ago, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, again, no spoilers, but the final battle is really fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's really tense, and it's really, you know, it's original. Valve always puts their own twist on, you know, final bosses. It's never just a final. Yeah, a typical final boss. Like, the boss in Portal is really interesting. Like,
except the boss in Half-Life 1 was a giant baby.
Right, that was a typical boss. And then since then, they've always come up with much more original encounters. And I just really enjoyed it. I mean, I take all the criticism that it's really just kind of more of the same. They haven't innovated hugely over episode. But, I mean, this is episodic stuff. I don't think, you know, we should really be expecting revolutionary stuff with each new episode. I think that'll come.
Which is kind of why I'm down at episodic these days.
Well, I think the reason everyone's bitching about episode 2 is if you buy it standalone, it's $30. Episode 1 was only $20. And 2, because it came out so far after episode 1. You know, we thought it was going to be 6 months, and it came like a year and a half. And also, it being the only... It was supposed to be the biggest part of the Orange Box / Black Box when that was still in the works, but turned out, you know, Portal and TF2 are the best parts, and it's definitely the weakest part, as strong as it is.
Yeah, and it's all relative, but yeah, it
tells it like it is.
It was on the bottom of the pile for a lot of us. Like, being a completionist, I insisted on playing through, you know, all of Half-Life 2 again because I hadn't played in like a year. And then playing all through episode 1 and then starting episode 2. So I'm a little bit behind, but I'm right now, like minutes away from that, climactic battle, or so Norm tells me. So don't go ruining climactic battles for me, people.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. I've had a good time, and it has had, you know, a lot of puzzles that are similar to the old ones. I mean, they're physics puzzles, yes. But I don't know, I've found it, you know, fun the whole time. I'm definitely gonna finish it. So.
Well, yeah, because
I've enjoyed it, and I think it says a lot about the quality of a game like Half-Life 2 that it's the game that I kept coming back to finish it, while, you know, Halo 3 is just sitting here gathering dust. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's Half-Life 2 is clearly the superior, experience, even though some people have said, yeah, it's just more of the same. But yeah, it's more of the same brilliant stuff that we liked so much in the previous games.
I haven't spoken to many Xbox gamers who've bought Orange Box on 360 and see what their experiences are. I know OXM reviewed it and they gave it a great score. But for them, Team Fortress 2 wasn't the best part, and they loved the Half-Life stuff because they never had it before. And Team Fortress 2 really is a game that's been developed for the PC. You need to make quick turns, you know, and it's the levels are really made for 16-on-16, not just 8v8. So for them, it's not the same experience. I mean, Portal can still be fun because that works great with controller too, but the Episode 2 experience is a little new for them, and Team Fortress 2 definitely is not the same.
Well, they did have Half-Life 1. or Half-Life 2, I'm sorry. Half-Life 2 did come out on the Xbox One.
Right, but it's not the same game at all. I mean, it's pretty different. Portal is kind of version proof. You know, it's an excellent game no matter what controller or format you play it on. But yeah, ironically, on the console formats, Team Fortress 2 is kind of the weakest link in the chain, because like you said, I mean, I was playing a game last night that was, I think, 8-on-8, and the map just felt completely empty. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this must be what it's like playing a game on Xbox Live, and it's not good. You know, you need a lot of players running around. They've had lag issues, which I know they're working on, and obviously the controller issues. It's definitely the weak link in the chain, but I think Half-Life 2 and the episodes have been really well received by players on consoles. I haven't seen it on 360.
But not received well enough. I mean, I hate going back to the Halo 3 thing. Halo 3 is not a bad game. I think it's a fine game. I just don't think it's the best game ever. Like, a lot of console fans are calling it. But Half-Life 2 plus Episode 1 plus Episode 2, it's such a more epic experience. But it's only getting like, you know, the mid 90% and the low 90% from console reviewers, while Halo 3 gets, you know, perfect scores across the board.
The hardcore Halo people are always going to be in favor of the game that's unique to their console, because they see it as, you know, a kind of a brand champion for them. It's everything that the Xbox, you know, brand stands for. Whereas with Half-Life, you know, it's obviously a game that originated on PC and will stay there, and they see it as a port, and it's like, you know, maybe those hardcore people are a little less receptive to it. But I've read a lot of opinions from people, from console gamers online, that had never played the Half-Life games before and have been playing through Half-Life 2 and the episodes, and they're just absolutely loving it. You know, I think by people that are a bit more open-minded, it's been really, really well received.
And, you know, another thing that I wanted to say about Episode 2 is, you know, having gone through each of them in sequence, Episode 2 does look significantly better than Episode 1 or the original Half-Life, or Half-Life 2, rather. Because they did do, you know, they reworked, especially the Vortigaunt models, look much, much better than they did in the previous two episodes. And like, there's been some texture work done and things like that. And it looks a lot better than it originally did.
Mm-hmm. I was talking when I was over at Valve, and I talked to some of the guys working on, you know, Orange Box. They put a lot of effort into tweaking Half-Life 2 and Episode 1 because of the new HDR stuff. And they also, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, pressing a button and turning on HDR. They had to go through and make sure lighting was correct and the experience was still the same playing through the game.
I've read a few comments from people as well that have just questioned the whole way in which Valve is handling the episodic side. You know, the issue seems to be, is this really episodic content when you're still waiting a number of years between episodes? You know,
I think they know that. They know that criticism's there, and that's why they've been calling this a trilogy, and we know the next section is going to be the last one, and they're probably working on a big revamp of the Source Engine, because the Source Engine is, I mean, as great as it looks now, and it still has some of the best facial animation ever, it's looking a little dated.
Yeah.
Have they said anything about when they're expecting Episode 3 to come out?
They have not said anything, but I would imagine, you know, I wouldn't be surprised late next year.
Yeah, I hope it's a little bit sooner, just so they can wrap it up, so they can move along to the next big thing, because they've got to have a next big
thing. Three.
Yeah, I mean, they're bound to do a Half-Life 3. They'd be crazy not to.
Well, I thought the trilogy was sort of Half-Life 3.
I would say it's more Half-Life 2.5,
yeah.
Since it's still talking about the Combine attack and, you know, escaping from City 17. Like, from Half-Life 1 to 2 was a big jump. You know, first you were surviving Black Mesa, and now Earth is taken over. I wouldn't be surprised if Half-Life 3 was a little more ambitious.
Do you think they'll do something where they sew the three episodes together and release that as a game?
They'll do a box set.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, not as a box set. I mean where they actually...
Oh, I doubt
no,
it.
No, I mean, like, them into the game.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they could do that. They could do like a director's cut of all three episodes, right, flowing
together
into each other. But I mean, you know, they also have natural kind of episodic act breaks, you know, where it's meant to kind of fade out and fade back in. So
sure.
I don't really know how seamless it would seem anyway.
Yeah, there's not really a point.
I don't want to spoil, you know, Episode 2 and the ending, but the end of Episode 2, it's not like an Empire Strikes Back ending. Well, it kind of is, but the setup for Episode 3 is supposed to set up a completely different environment for where the story is going. So it almost feels like a separate game.
It also seems like it's, and again, not too many, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but it does also seem to set up a bit of a Portal crossover as well.
Right. They do mention something like, you know, drop a hint or something like that, which would be really cool if they had portals in episode 3, and they'd be kind of weird if they didn't use that technology.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, some elite coders and modders have figured out a way to incorporate portals into the Half-Life world. There are some cool instructions online where if you extract the maps from the Half-Life 2 or Episode 1 or Episode 2 files, source files, you can dump them into the portal directory and then load up those maps with the characters and the scripting and the AI all inside Portal. I tried a little bit of that yesterday, and it was really cool running through. And you can have the weapons and toss grenades through portals and dodge combine troops. And, you know, it gives you a little bit of a taste of how playing a single-player game with portals will be.
I was just really buzzing, though.
It's really crazy that it would work that easily.
Yeah.
It's all based on the same engine.
Or a major mod, though, to make it work. And it seems like it's been a lot easier to make it work.
Yeah, Normax, you got it working. How long did it take you, Norm?
I timed it. It took me 10 minutes.
That's not so bad. But I was really disappointed in reading the instructions. I haven't tried it yet, but I was disappointed that enemies cannot pass through portals, which that's disappointing. I would have liked to.
They're freaked out. They're like, dude, what WTF?
Yeah, I just love in Portal, taking out turrets by, you know, putting a portal, like up high somewhere and then shooting a portal underneath them and they fall. That is hilarious to me. And I'm just sad that I wouldn't be able to do that with this mod. But it does open up a lot of possibilities, like, you know, opening up a portal behind somebody and tossing a grenade through, or you can drop something heavy on them through a portal. All kinds of fun stuff. Nora, did you have any good stories?
It was mostly, I turned on God mode, because you're still playing as the Portal character, because it's essentially in Portal, but just new maps, you have really fast health regen, but I was trying to do some speed runs, getting from one end to the level as quickly as possible, and escaping all the enemies, and having a lot of fun with that. What it also exposed to me is how difficult I think it's going to be to incorporate portals into like a first-person shooter level, because I could shoot portals onto rooftops where I'm not supposed to access, and once I jump through them, suddenly I'm in the gray area, and there are no floors beneath me, and the game crashes.
Right, but that's just because they didn't design that with it in mind. I mean, they can
exactly
much bigger worlds or make limits, you know, and like in Portal, have an area where you can't cast a portal, and that's
in Portal, the way I mean they indicate with wall textures. Where you can and cannot deploy portals. I think if they do that in a single-player game, it's going to feel more restrictive because not like a test, you know, laboratory setting. You're in the real world, so you're going to expect to be able to deploy portals anywhere you want, but in reality, you can't because that would break the game.
Well, and they can always, you know, write something into the fiction where, you know, certain materials just don't, you know, would, you know, disrupt the portal, whatever, you know. So it's not that big an issue.
Of course, the next step will be a portal gunner class in Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, multiplayers, I mean, they haven't got it working in multiplayer right now, but that's what I really want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I think coding AI is going to be tough, so they interact with portals realistically, and in multiplayer, it's going to be a whole completely different animal.
Well, I think they did it in Prey. The AI knew how to use portals in that game. So
AI on Prey also wasn't very smart.
No, it was an in-game AI, which has always been, you know, just run at you and shoot, but it could navigate through portals, so. Got to give them that. So I guess the other thing we wanted to mention about the orange box this week is that there have been a few Easter eggs spotted tying it into Lost. There are a couple screenshots. It doesn't say where they came from exactly in the game, but there's a screenshot of the Dharma Initiative logo, kind of, you know, half faded. Or at least something very similar to it. And then there's also a screenshot of a computer with 4, 6, 15, 16, 23, 42 on it. Nice little, you know, hidden treat for anybody who, you know, cares to look for it. This post, which you can find in our delicious links, does not say exactly where it is. But.
That's kind of funny because, some of the criticism I've heard about Half-Life and Episode 1, Episode 2 is that there's a lot of plot in these games, but not much story. I mean, things happen and you get attacked and, you know, you're doing a lot of things, but you never get you never uncover the secrets of the world. There's so many more questions than there are answers, much like in Lost. But yeah, I do appreciate
it. I mean, their storytelling method is kind of odd in that I know what's going on, and you know, I know like what my immediate goals are. I know the Combine is bad, and and you know, things like that. But I know I just never get quite the cohesive sense of the story I do with other fiction universes, like, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff like that.
Well, even in other games like BioShock, where the story is an important part of the game, and you have to really understand the story in order to get the full experience. It's not that because Half-Life is a game that it can't have a great story, and it still does have a great story. It's just that I think, you know, there's a balance between having events happen, making sure the player feels like he's having a great adventure, and also telling a really good story.
Yeah, I think it's got something to do with you know, implementing the show don't tell philosophy of storytelling. Because they expect you to pick up on a lot of stuff that some people, I mean, having played a lot of games and, you know, just getting used to going through and achieving the objectives and not necessarily scrutinizing the environment, we may have missed. Because there are a lot of people out there who know all this detailed story that they've pieced together. So I don't know how they do it, though.
They played through it many, many times.
Since last week, there have been a few new demos to come out, most notably Unreal Tournament 3 and Call of Duty 4. We've been playing around with those in the office, and as we've got some conflicting views on Call of Duty between Norm and Gaz.
Yeah, Gary, why don't you tell us what do you think about the game? And I'll tell you then why you're wrong.
It was a disappointment for me, perhaps partly because it's been so anticipated. You know, I've long been a complainer about the World War II scenario getting trotted out over and over again, and, you know, getting to the point where, you know, even to an enthusiast of World War II history like myself, it eventually just felt like, you know, come on, do something else. And I love the whole Tom Clancy military, you know, the realism feel. I mean, even though it's not a realistic play style, I like the idea of it feeling like kind of on the cutting edge of modern technological warfare. So it really kind of played, you know, into the kind of things that I find personally interesting. And then I jumped into the game, and it definitely, you know, it provides that feel. But as a gameplay experience, it just felt like so many other shooters that I've played before, particularly in the light of you know, games like Rainbow Six Vegas and Gears of War, and games that really use things like cover fire and you know, just clever mechanics that make it feel more like a you know, you really got to cover your ass and you know, and try not to get shot. You know, to take that kind of military, that Clancy vibe, and put it onto a shooter where you're just running around picking up health packs and getting shot at, and you can get shot over and over and over again, and you know, you're fine, and there's no real cover. It's just so much crazy stuff exploding all the time. It just felt like every shooter I've ever played with a new kind of wallpaper on it. It didn't feel like they'd done anything with the gameplay at all to make it feel like it was appropriate to this kind of universe.
First of all, there are no health packs in Call of Duty. You auto regenerate, which is not at all realistic.
Oh right, it's the Halo hazard suit thing. The health pack.
Unless you're Hayden Panettiere, or Panettiere, however you pronounce her name, from Heroes.
I think you're expecting a different game. I mean, you say it's too much like the Rainbow Six model, but I think it's nothing like the Rainbow Six games. And
I'm not talking about the
Rainbow Six games at all.
I'm talking about the setting.
No, that's the point. Is I like the Rainbow Six type setting. I like the techno war setting of it feeling very kind of modern and very high tech. I'm just saying I don't think that necessarily goes with this kind of as a gameplay experience. It doesn't feel like there's anything innovative in here at all. It just feels like every kind of run and gun shooter that I've played. And I wrote a column ages ago that was right after kind of the Gears of War. Not that Gears of War is a realistic game at all, but the cover fire mechanic that came out in that and around the same time in Rainbow Six Vegas really kind of made it feel more like a realistic experience to me. Even though it wasn't, it felt more realistic. And I think I said something at the time about how other games, you know, in the wake of this, are going to have to do similar things and try and build on that idea, or they're just going to feel like old-fashioned games. And this really bears that out for me. It just feels like an old-fashioned game.
I don't know, though. Would it be Call of Duty if they changed up the mechanics so much to make it more like, you know, Gears of War or or Rainbow Six. It just plays exactly like Call of Duty. It's just in a different setting.
The gameplay style of this game is most like Call of Duty. It feels nothing like Rainbow Six. It's distinctly Call of Duty, where you feel like you're really being plopped in the middle of a huge war, in the middle of a battlefield where you're just a soldier. And the environment just feels alive. And there are plenty of innovations, in Call of Duty 4. If you look at it, the cover of the vehicles that you can hide behind, they explode, so you're not going to always be able to stay behind like a abandoned car in the middle of the street, and that actually works in multiplayer as well. There's also bullet penetration for walls, doors, and other objects now. So, you know, depending on how thick a wall is and how far away you're shooting from, you can shoot guys behind walls, which I don't think has ever been seen really in other games. But really, that feeling of being, you know, in a real Middle Eastern city, surrounded by hundreds of other guys, fighting hundreds of other guys, enemies, and I think that's unique to the Call of Duty series, and that's what makes it really fun.
I'm sure. I think there will be other missions, like the SAS missions and the sniper missions and things that feel a bit more kind of stealthy and a bit more realistic. But, you know, that the mission that they picked for this demo, which just seemed to be kind of very kind of crazy running around. I mean, it just doesn't feel like what's, you know, not that I have any idea what's going on, you know, in Afghanistan or Iraq right now, but it just didn't feel realistic to me. It just seemed too chaotic, too much like something out of a Halo.
War is chaos.
Yeah, I would. Well,
but war is also nothing like this. But I mean, the question is, World War II was nothing like Call of Duty 2 or Call of Duty 1 for that matter, because, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's just a style of gameplay that, you know, may or may not be to your liking, but I mean, a lot of people obviously love it because Call of Duty has a huge following.
I think maybe what it is just that this particular, especially because, you know, war, especially the Middle East mission, I mean, it's so kind of in everyone's minds right now, and it's something that, you know, obviously should be taken seriously, that to turn it into, you know, this very, very kind of Hollywood art, like, it wouldn't be appropriate right now to have a movie come out that's set in this kind of world, like in Iraq or whatever, and be kind of like a crazy Schwarzenegger run and gun action movie. You know, you'd expect something to be a bit more kind of thoughtful and a bit, you know, and take realism more into account. And that's why the Clancy, the Rainbow Six type, and the Ghost Recon type games feel more appropriate to this kind of setting. This just kind of feels like a dumbed down version of a very real thing.
Fair enough.
I think it's more like a Saving Private Ryan type of feeling, the chaos, but set in modern day. That's the impression I got from the game. And, you know, there will be actually a realism setting when the full game comes out. I know a lot of modders, you know, when shooters come out, they always create like a real ultra realism mode where, you know, there are one-shot kills and bullets really ricochet and you don't have to regen health. That's going to be a mode that's going to be built into Call of Duty 4 when it comes out.
The other demo that really caught our attention was Unreal Tournament 3, which we were playing a little bit in the office. And Norm, you were complaining about performance without turning down the settings again, I believe.
Yes.
why can't I max out the settings on this new game?
I am a firm believer that when I play a game, I want to play at the max settings to get the full experience, no matter how crappy my system is. And I don't have a bad system. I have an 8800 GTX, and I loaded it up and cranked it up all the way to the max. You know what? The Unreal 3 demo actually doesn't even have the max settings. They only have like medium textures.
They don't allow anti-aliasing in the demo, unless you tweak it. You can go online and look up how to do it. There are some command line things you can put in the shortcut to do it, anti-aliasing.
Yeah. But running it at 1920 by 1200 and then jumping into a multiplayer game with, you know, half a dozen people, it was running not at a smooth 30 frames per second, but more like a 15 to 20 frames per second, which for a fast-paced deathmatch game just wasn't cutting it.
I have a hint for you, Norm. Turn down the model detail. Turn down texture detail. Turn things down.
And you know what?
No, Norm, stick to your guns and just whine.
Turn it down until it meets your system's, you know, specifications, because otherwise...
Then why wouldn't I just play Unreal Tournament 2004? Because it's the same game.
Is it?
It really is the same. It's the same game.
It's got some new stuff in there.
No. There are the new vehicles, but the deathmatch levels with the pretty much the same weapons that look different. They have new models. It's pretty much this. I mean, that was what they wanted. Epic wanted to capture the exact same feel of UT and what made UT great, with the same weapons, but just incorporate new levels, one new gameplay style, vehicles, and of course their fancy Unreal Engine 3, which is the biggest change in this game, Unreal Engine 3. So I want to play 4 Unreal Engine 3. And if I can't play it for that, then I'll wait.
You can play
until
it.
I can upgrade
you can play it. It's going to look better than UTO 4. It just isn't going to look as good as it possibly can yet. And as you upgrade your system, as new stuff comes out, it will look better and better without having to buy a new game. That's the whole idea.
It grows with
you.
Yeah,
and it's not... it does. That's what the...
It's, no, it's true.
Yeah, and it's...
What's bad about
it's,
that? Yeah.
It is. I just don't understand Norm's mindset here. Where...
You guys forgot I was here. Yeah. To be honest, I sort of forgot I was here.
Chris has no idea where she is right now. No, I just don't understand Norm's mindset where just because the settings exist in the game, I should be able to play it at that setting right now.
No. There's a matter of should and want to. I want to. I don't need to, and maybe
and
I shouldn't.
And you will be able to.
But I so want to.
But you can't.
And
you
I can be disappointed.
You know what? I want a squirrel, and I can't have one of those either.
And hence, you're disappointed. So, in the same vein, I am also
sorry, guys.
Disappointed.
You got me there.
I'm
but
disappointed
you know
I can't play this
someday,
game.
Someday, you'll be able to play with the settings maxed out. Logan.
Exactly. And I look forward to that day.
I'll be able to get a squirrel.
No. Yeah, someday.
No.
I mean,
never.
If you want to spend the money... And buy a squirrel, you can have a squirrel, and if
and
I want to spend the money.
Change the law in California, which says I can't.
Oh, well. You can move. You can also move. It's a matter of conviction. I guess you just don't
but
have enough
Norm,
conviction.
So,
I can
so
move.
Norm
well,
would be
so
happy.
Can you. You can go to another
yeah.
planet.
Norm would be happy then if developers just made their games that, you know, didn't build in any future planning at all and made them. Made
no,
them.
No, no,
That's
no, no.
You want to run it at the maximum spec available in the game.
I want to. Yeah,
right,
I want
so
to.
So you'd be happy.
But I don't. Definitely necessarily expect to, but I want
you
to.
You would be happier if they just put out a game that didn't push boundaries.
No.
Well, apparently that's what
no,
you're saying.
No.
You would be happy.
I would be happier with a better system.
That system doesn't exist yet.
No, I think it does exist.
it would cost $10,000.
Well, then it exists.
It does not
exist. You're just being snotty
yeah.
now, Norman.
This is silly. You're saying you're not going to play Crysis because you can't max it out yet?
No, I'll totally play Crysis.
But he won't like it.
But it won't be... But it won't be the best experience.
No, it's not supposed to be the best experience yet.
Yeah, but you know, like we said before, it is totally cool to be able to come back 6 months here, year
later. I agree, it's totally
later,
cool.
You know, and
but
play...
I also think there's nothing wrong in wanting that experience
of
now.
Of course you
and
should
it's
want
that want.
Oh, no, you can want it.
And that's
but
what I'm saying. I want
you
it.
Can't,
yeah.
I'm saying, oh, screw this, I'm gonna go back to UTO 4.
No, that's, I never said I would. I said that's, you know, that's if I want to turn the graphics down. I'm gonna play at the high
He's
resolution.
Backing up.
And I'll
He's
take,
backing off.
I'll take the low frame rates just to see okay. it. And
guess who I am?
That's my preference.
I believe that the sound is more like, wah. Wah.
Wah.
Wah. Kristen, would you like to make the noise?
No, thanks.
How about you guys? Surely you want to make a wah.
No.
Come on, give us a good one. Give us a belly wah.
I'm fine.
Gaz just knows that if he does it, I'm just going to replay it. Yeah, because I'm actually producing this one because Jeremy's on vacation. So brace yourselves.
Oh my God! I just checked
Gary. Where do you think
Gary's
he went? You think he went
stat.
To Thailand?
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to see Gary's Team Fortress 2 stats, you have to join the Steam community group. That's the price of admission to see that freak show. So Norm. The demo you are allowed to complain about is Time Shift. Cause I know you had
yeah.
some stuff to say about that.
Wait.
that game actually running on the same, is it the same engine? I'm not sure if it's Unreal Engine 3. Well, I mean, it has a crazy parallax mapping, whatever. It looked great and it ran really smoothly, but, it was a big disappointment. The time shifting abilities, you didn't get to use, I mean, it seemed much more like a gimmick, not even used as well as Fear. They talked about how you would be able to reverse time, but you can't control when you reverse time. You can, your suit tells you which of your time shifting abilities you can use at a certain time.
Yeah, that's the part that I haven't played it yet. I'm just, you know, Norm played it and told me this and I suddenly lost interest in playing the demo. Because I hate being told what powers I can use when. I mean, it was cute in BioShock
good.
When they shifted through your when you couldn't control your plasmids for a while, but that wasn't the whole game. For the rest of the game, I could do whatever I want whenever I wanted. And
I mean, you can do it whenever you want. You can choose not to use the power, but I mean, there are three time shifting options. You can either slow down time, reverse time, or pause time. But your suit tells you which of the three you get to use at any given moment.
Right, that's the whatever
based on
I want.
The situation.
Part exactly. It's the whatever I want part of the whatever I want, whenever I want equation. And that, that doesn't work for me. That's very disappointing.
Otherwise, it looked really great. The rain effects were pretty amazing, watching rain slow down. Technology-wise, it's stunning. The design-wise, not so much. And I don't know how it's going to work in multiplayer. I mean, that's something I haven't tried yet, so I'll have to look forward to that.
Yeah. I mean, I played, like, a long time ago. Like, you know, if you track Time Shift's development, there it's quite a timeline. They had, let's call it version 1.0, where the demo came out that I guess the developers say never should have come out. It was a much more like steampunkish art style and kind of cartoony. And I guess in that demo, I seem to remember being able to do whatever I want, whenever I wanted. But it wasn't all there, and it looked kind of like a B-rate game when that demo came out. And then they took it all back, said, we're going to revamp this. About, I don't know, 6 to 8 months later, I played a little bit of a multiplayer match in there. And they had, a pretty cool concept with these, like, time distortion grenades. We could throw those down and, it would create a bubble where time would go much slower or much faster or, I don't think they could do backwards in that because that doesn't really make sense. But it created some cool, gameplay abilities. Like, you could throw down a super slow time bubble and fire a bunch of rockets into it. And then when it turned off, all the rockets would fire at once.
No.
there was a lot of... it was pretty fun in multiplayer. So I hope that's still in the game. Other demos that are coming out, or have already come out. Hellgate London demo came out today. It's a 1.4 gigabyte peek at the RPG-ness. And I just said RPG-ness. That doesn't sound good. Norm, would you like to see my RPG-ness?
No.
But yeah, and the other demo that's out is Sega Rally Revo, which I haven't seen much of that one in action yet, but it looks like a pretty impressive. An impressive looking racing game. So check those out. So let's move on to some reader questions, listener questions, reader/listener questions.
Hey guys, love the show. I too am playing Team Fortress, and I too suck at it really bad. Just picked up a G5 Logitech mouse. Absolutely love it. Hope that will help my pathetic skills. And I was curious that the guy at the store was giving me an earful about precision mouse pads. If you think, something like that also is beneficial when you're gaming. I'm using a wireless keyboard, and I don't know if that's a big deal because I know this mouse was corded. I don't know if there's a latency time in it or not. Anyway, love the show, and I do appreciate the censorship, so keep it up. See ya. Bye.
Don't swear at him. I saw that coming.
That one, yeah. That one coming.
You know, precision mouse pads and, precision mice and all that, are they effective? Do they work? Absolutely. If you already suck, are they going to make any better? Probably not.
Well, first of all, he says he too is sucking in Team Fortress 2. We're not sucking. So don't bring us into your inadequacies.
No.
I think having a corded mouse is a lot better than having a wireless mouse because at least for me, I've noticed that a corded mouse, there's minuscule, latency difference. Wireless keyboard, I don't like them. I like having, corded keyboards, if not for the same thing. I think a lot of Bluetooth keyboards we've tested before in the past, they've had, moments of quirkiness where, it won't recognize, like, a one button press for a millisecond, but in a game, that could make a big difference.
I had the batteries in my cordless mouse die on me in the middle of a Team Fortress 2 game.
Which one do you use,
I just have like a crappy old Logitech cordless optical mouse, just like a really bog standard one. I can't really use a lot of the fancier ones because they're all molded to fit the right hand. I'm a lefty, so I need to use the boring symmetrical.
Razer makes some decent ambidextrous ones.
In fact, I've got a Microsoft Laser, one of the high-end ones, but it always gives me carpal tunnel if I use it for too long. I just like the old-fashioned ones. But yeah, it's not one that sits in a dock and recharges or anything. It's just it takes two AA batteries, and you never remember. There's no warning or anything. It just suddenly stops, and that'll often happen at a perfectly opportune time. But the other night it happened when I was right in the middle of a firefight in TF2, and obviously it cost me a life. That's another one of the perils of this kind of.
So if you're ever using, if you're ever playing a game where if you die in the game you actually die, do not have a wireless mouse. I like to say, first of all, I love the G5, especially if you got the 2-button version. I have the 1-button version, which, it's great. The ergonomics of it are just about perfect, I think. I think they really messed up when they made the G9 and made it all boxy and terrible. The G5 is just about perfection in ergonomics. It's really comfortable and, really precise. The wireless version of the G5, the G7, I used for a while, and actually it was about the most responsive wireless mouse I've ever used. And one of the really cool things, which Gaz, this would solve your problem almost, is, not only did it have the battery indicator LED on the top, it also had, the wireless receiver also had a battery charger in it. So,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about, like those ones that you put in the dock.
No, this is not what you're talking about. This is better. This is way better.
How is it better?
That is not... You are not talking about this.
This has a pair of battery cartridges. So when your battery runs low, you pop it out, pop the one that's sitting in the charger out, swap them, and you're good to go. It takes like 2 seconds.
Like the charger kit for the Xbox. I like that.
I don't know what that is, but
it has two batteries that sit in a charger, and when one is about to die, you put the other one in the charger and take the fresh one.
Yeah. I used that mouse for quite a while. Eventually the battery capacity went pretty low and I was swapping out batteries too frequently. But while it lasted, it was great.
I would just settle for a low battery warning. So you've got if you are gaming, you've got the opportunity to switch the batteries out at an opportune time and not have it die on you without warning when you're in the middle of, I mean, it happened to me. I didn't really care. I mean, I died. It was like, no big deal. But, like, you can imagine, like, if you're in the middle of, like, a flag capture or some critical moment for the battery to die, like, you would break something.
You should try and, update your software, because I think the more recent versions might have a battery warning that'll pop up.
Yeah, I should look into that. Because I can't tell you how many mice that I've bought since this one. I've had this mouse for years, and I've always thought, well, this new technology laser, that sounds better. This thing, has got all these kind of buttons and doodads on it, and they all sit on the shelf here, and I always come back to this old one that I've had for like 5 years.
I mean, for anyone getting a new mouse, I really do think the laser ones are better. They have higher DPIs, and DPI really is the biggest difference. And
the best mouse we've tried out lately has been the Microsoft Sidewinder, the new one. It's amazing.
Yeah. Be sure when you're picking up a new mouse for gaming that it has variable DPIs that you can test out, because a lot of people like to play with low DPIs. They like to move their hands a lot. If you like high DPIs, they might be too sensitive for you, but also requires that only you have quick movements with the flick of a wrist. So try it out. I don't really like the mouse pads. I think they're a sham, pretty much. What's more important is that you clean the bottom of your mouse frequently and get rid of the dust that accumulates. And really, the mouse pad, that all does is protect you from dust.
Yeah, I agree with that for the most part. I mean, if you're working on a crappy desk surface, then yeah, get a decent mouse pad, and one that's not gonna one that's a reasonable size, and you're not gonna go off it and have to keep picking up your mouse and moving around.
Plus, it should be dark and track, to help
the reflection.
Yeah, I mean, there's
to help the mouse.
There's some that advertise will work on any surface, but you don't want to use it on any surface for gaming.
No.
Keyboards, though, I just wanted to revisit that really quick. I am currently using at home a Microsoft Wireless 4000, I think, the ergonomic one, the split keyboard one, which I like a lot. When the batteries get low, it starts acting funky. So make sure you keep fresh batteries in it if you're going to use it for gaming.
I've always found that wireless keyboards are a little more jittery than wireless mice. They seem to be less reliable. And, you know, unless you're one of these people that likes to sit far, I mean, I know that you've got that big screen,
right,
Dan, but for most people, they just sit at their desks. I understand why you'd want a cordless mouse, because, you know, the cable always kind of like tugs on the mouse a little bit and it's annoying, and I would never go back to a wired mouse. But, you know, from the majority of people that just sit at their desks, you know, what's the point of a wireless keyboard? It's really for people that want to sit way back or sit on a couch.
You know, I haven't used a jittery wireless keyboard in years, so it may be just like a perception problem, because they were like that before, but I haven't had that problem seriously in at least
they've
two,
gotten
three
better.
Years.
I don't like the Bluetooth ones, because Bluetooth will kind of go to sleep to conserve battery power, because they do use a lot of juice. RF is like always on, always responsive, and that's what this one is. It's an RF receiver.
Hey, PC Gamer Crush Crew, name's Marco Ferreras, but you may know me as Mark C on the PCG Steam Group. Just wondering if you guys are thinking of making like a Steam community event on the page, like for Team Fortress 2, because I'm loving the game and I'd like to test my skills. Also, can you guys recommend a good 5.1 surround sound system that I can use with my PC and maybe my TV and 360? I know I have a 360, whatever. But yeah, that'd be great. Nothing too fancy.
Whatever.
Anyways, thanks a lot. Love the podcast. Keep up the sweet work.
I think it's called 10 p.m. every night, PST.
Yeah, there are no events set up right now. We just haven't really had the time. Well, I guess we do have the time. We just spent it all playing the game.
It's hard to get all the staff coordinated at once because we're all doing different things after work. But that's the whole point of the Steam group, is because, you know, you can tell which of the players are online. I mean, we'd love to play with you guys, and I know Gaz is on all the time. I jump in with him sometimes, and with Will Smith from MaxPC. So whenever you see us on, just jump in our game. We have a couple of regulars that play with us, and they've gotten pretty good, so we enjoy playing with
them. Yeah, we've got a good little regular crew now of people that all know each other, and I've also been playing with some of the guys from Valve on my friends list, and they obviously it's actually very educative. There's one guy from Valve who I play with who usually plays as a spy, and it's very informative. I mean, that is definitely the most kind of high-risk, elegant, complex class to play. You know, you die a lot, but you also can do some really amazing stuff. And it's really educational and instructive sometimes just to sit in spectator mode and watch good players play and watch how spies, you know, do their thing, you know, how they don't get caught. It's really cool. But yeah, we've been having some great games, and it's definitely more fun to play with a reliable group of people. The only achievement I don't have in Team Fortress 2 right now is the one that you get for playing an entire game with eight people, an eight-player team that's everyone from your friends' lists. Hmm. I haven't done that yet.
You also don't have the medic one where you heal 25,000 points or 250,000 points.
Oh, that's right, because I don't. Medic is my least play class. I don't get any satisfaction from helping other people at all.
Yeah.
So not a class I've played a lot.
I'll be in there more once I finish Half-Life, and you know, if Crisis doesn't totally consume me. But so Logan, what's a good 5.1 system?
You know, if you got the money, I don't know how much they're going for these days, but the Logitech X530 is a great 5.1 setup that doesn't cost too much, but I'm not quite sure how much it's going for these days.
Well, the thing
not
is,
too much.
I mean, 5.1 systems, they used to come out with new models. Logitech Creative and Klipsch used to be the big three, and they came out with new models every year, but there really haven't been new models in the past, I'd say, 2 or 3 years, just because sound technology has reached this peak. If you want a system that will work with both your PC, your home theater, and your Xbox 360, you're going to have to, you know, look into maybe getting a receiver or one of those Creative standalone receiver things, because the 360 only outputs 5.1 if you have an optical input for your speakers. And PCs usually they output not with optical for surround sound, but with the three, you know, front channel, rear channel, and center channel. And console systems don't do that, and neither do most home theater systems. So you might need a receiver. I know there are some speaker systems that have optical built in, but not like the low end, you know, $200 ones. I'd say anyone from Creative, like their G400 series is a good pick.
G500, I think is, I'm not sure if they sell the G400, but I know that G500 is still available. And you can even get it in a wireless G550W, where the rear speakers are,
I keep hearing those aren't very good quality though. Like you get like background noise.
I like them. It's what I use at home because there's no other way I can get the speakers.
But did
it
swap batteries out?
No. It's got its own adapter.
It's wireless to the computer, but not wireless.
You're wireless to the rear speakers. Right. Yeah.
Got it.
But I love them. I'm very happy with it because I otherwise couldn't do a 5.1 at home. And that was an amazing little riff there that you did. Anyone else impressed as I am? Did you have some of that gum today?
I did have some of that gum.
Yeah, I could hear it, man. I could hear it with that. Norm's really up and out.
Yeah, let's do one more.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. You guys are doing a fantastic job. This is Cliff from Anaheim, California. Hey, listen, I was just wondering, basically, what does it cost to make a AAA title? We know now that it takes, you know, years and years of development just to make one game. So does it cost, you know, $40 million, $100 million? I was just wondering what it costs to make these games, and if you guys can give us some insight on that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks again. Keep up the great work.
I think that's a really good question. He's right. The games are definitely more expensive now, and it's because, you know, developing new technologies, like new graphics engines, and getting all the, like, the high-def sound, high-def textures, it requires bigger teams and a whole lot more work. I don't know exactly, you know, like with movies have like $100 million budgets, but then they also have matching $100 million marketing budgets. You know, a AAA title has its development costs, has its marketing costs. There are tons of costs involved. Stranglehold, I think, I don't know if it's public. Can we see what the rumors were?
I just Googled it, and there's a Kotaku link saying Stranglehold has a $30 million price tag.
Yeah, that was the. I mean, that was, a lot of that was probably for talent because they had to license it. You know, probably had to pay John Woo a whole lot of money and Chow Yun-Fat a whole lot of money. I mean, that was an Unreal Engine 3 game, and you know, licensing that engine probably isn't.
Yeah,
isn't,
I think that's
cheap
probably
either.
You know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, or if not, you know, low millions.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd say, like, you know, $10 million is probably
ten or tens, but probably in the low tens of millions.
I've never heard of a game that was estimated over $20 million.
I mean, I'm sure WoW, you know, just in terms of, you know, keeping it up and running, except it's, you know, generating money like hand over fist all the time, so kind of a different thing.
And if you think about that, I mean, a lot of PC games, I mean, it's a reason that we don't see a lot of PC exclusive games come out anymore, because if a game costs $10-15 million to make, and you know, they're selling them for $50 a pop, but the publisher only gets maybe, you know, $20-15 of that, they're going to sell, you know, millions of copies just to make back their investment. And PC games don't usually sell millions of copies.
Consoles do,
it's
though.
A
so that,
game.
That's why you see a lot of people, you know, throwing a lot of money at consoles, because there's a better chance of a good return on it. I mean, obviously there are all these games coming out for the PC as well. I mean, Crysis is PC exclusive for at least the foreseeable future. So it's going to be, and that can't have been a cheap game. We have no idea how much that costs, but it can't be cheap. So.
And companies don't often like to share that information for whatever reason.
Yeah, especially if they don't have to, they're not going to tell.
And just because a game can cost $10 million to make doesn't mean a good game has to cost that much to make. I mean, there are a lot of independent publishers, you know, creating games like Darwinia and DEFCON that probably didn't cost more like $1 million to develop, but are fantastic games, indie games that
absolutely
look and play just as great as any AAA title.
This is Jason P. White. And I was looking at Orange Box reviews, and I'm curious because the Orange Box, let's say on Metacritic.com, got a 96% review score. But when I look at the individual scores of each of the games included in the Orange Box, Half-Life 2 is 96%, Episode 1, 87, Episode 2, 91, Portal, 89, and Team Fortress 2, 93. And I'm just wondering, those numbers don't really average out to 96, so... when people are reviewing the Orange Box as a whole, are they just factoring in best score of the best game included, or is it the fact that it's all those games included for a cheaper price raises the score a bit? I'm just wondering what you guys think. Thanks. Jason P. White, out.
Kristen, do you want to weigh in on that?
That was before I was here. That was before I had this job. But, you know, that because Orange Box is the product that we were rating, and in Orange Box you get all three of those. I suppose if we had decided we were going to do three different reviews, we could have done that. I mean, you can buy the products individually, but as far as I'm concerned, if you are buying the Orange Box, then you're getting everything that comes with it, and that's what we wanted
to. For one price, and if you bought them separately, they would be for different prices separately. So they would probably get different scores. In a lot of places, I mean, review sites reviewed them separately and as a package, and the scores were, it didn't seem to make sense, but, you know, I think you're right. The score is higher as a package is because it includes so much for $50.
Yeah, obviously part of what we take into account when we're reviewing is, I mean, this, my philosophy is what we're doing with reviews, you know, is essentially helping you figure out how to spend your money. Like, games are expensive. And our assumption is that there are very few people out there with unlimited resources. You can just go out and try everything. It's not just because you don't want to spend time on a poor game. We don't want you to spend your money on a poor game. So that's definitely part of what we're taking into account. And in this case, you know, there was the bang for the buck was definitely something I think that we took into account. End of.
Hi, PC Gamer crew. Chris Komisky from Mansua, Texas again. Havoc 06 and Team Fortress 2. Let me first apologize for calling you guys robotic a few weeks back. I did not mean robotic in a bad way. I meant in a good way. You know,
cut
like
the
Generation
mic.
1 Transformers, GoBots, Voltron, you know, because those guys are
wow, nice save.
Nice.
Anyway, this week I have a question about how many awesome games are coming out this year and what it's doing for the PC. In my opinion, this is like a second golden age of gaming. I was wondering if you guys agree or not. Like right now, I'm playing games like World in Conflict, Bioshock, every game in the Orange Box, Call of Duty 4 demo, Unreal Tournament 3 demo. I mean, list goes on and on. And, I mean, games like Hellgate London and Crysis haven't even come out yet. It's crazy. What do you guys think? I mean, is this like a reawakening of the PC? Is this kind of the proverbial phoenix rising from the ashes and just, like, destroying consoles? It really seems like, for me, there are so many awesome games coming out. I don't remember another time when it was like this. Except for me, which was like way back in 1996, 1997, when I was playing games like the original Quake, the original Team Fortress for Quake, Red Alert, Lords of the Realm 3, you know, all the classics. You know, I really feel like this is similar to that era. And I feel like this is the year of the PC. I was wondering if you guys agree, disagree, discuss. Let me know. Oh, and always remember, if at first you don't succeed, you are not Gary Whitta.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll let somebody else parse that one, but I think the fact that Crysis is PC only for the foreseeable future says it all.
Yeah, and there are a terrific number of great games coming out this year. It is much, much better than last year, I think. I mean, last year was okay, but this year, the crop is outstanding. So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's kind of like wine years, you know? this is a great...
I mean... I think the last time we had a lot of great games like this come out for the holiday season, and it really is really centered on the holiday season, was 1999 when we had Quake 3 and UT come out and Half-Life come out in 98. And I think it's just because development cycles all kind of match up. You know, developers finish a game at the same time and they all start a 2-3 year cycle, and then they all get delayed for a year and then they all come out the same holiday season. What does that mean for gamers? It means you have a huge selection of games, to buy. It also means that it's been tough to play them all, and a lot of games that otherwise, you know, are great games could get lost in the fold. Games like Enemy Territory Quake Wars, which is, it's fantastic, but it's not getting nearly as much playtime as, you know, a game like Team Fortress 2, just because it came out, you know, around the same time.
I don't think it's fair, though, to go all the way back to like 98 for to say that, you know, that was the last great PC gaming year. I mean, we had, you know, like, in the last 3 years or so, and there was Half-Life 2, there was Doom 3, there was, you know, Quake 4, Fear, Supreme Commander, CNC 3.
But not all in the same year.
Well, not in the same year, but I mean, there have been a lot of great games, and they like Doom 3 and Half-Life 2 came out not too far apart. There was Oblivion, you know, and you know there have been a lot of great games coming out. So it's not there is a glut of them right now. But you know, I don't think it's fair to say that the PC hasn't done much in a while, and now it's all of a sudden it's doing great again.
Norm.
The PC isn't coming back. The PC never went away.
Good answer. I also think I want to parallel it to like Hollywood. I mean, this past summer was when all the trilogies, all the part threes came out, and I think a lot of movies were hurt because of that, and they're all well. first of all, they weren't all that great. There were a bunch of them.
That was Spider-Man 3.
But,
excuse me.
But, you know, there were some great movies.
For some reason,
that...
the word Spider-Man 3 just popped into my head. That was so weird.
Sorry.
There are a lot of, you know, people, again, they only have like $50 or $100 to spend, or most people, you know, on games or entertainment, you know, whether they're going to choose to spend that on games, movies, or, you know, DVDs, they can't buy it all. That's the only negative thing I can think about.
Logan, what have you been playing?
Portal. I love Portal.
Logan was all resistant to Portal too, and I think it was mostly just to piss Norm off.
Portal.
Like for a couple days after it came out, he just wouldn't play it, and Norm was like, "Play Portal, play it." And
why doesn't Portal have squirrels? Then it would be the perfect game.
So.
Portal.
And so he was a little bit behind all of us, but,
Well, Mr. Stapleton, I've been playing Portal.
That's lovely to hear.
That's my formal answer. Portal.
And Gaz, I guess we know what you've been playing, huh?
Well, I've been playing the Orange Box in all its forms. I actually took a little break from Team Fortress 2 to dive into, episode 2 and plow through to the end of that and finish it. I was really glad that I did, because like I said, I really enjoyed it. I do think it's just got a raw deal in the sense that it's had the misfortune of being in a package with two other better games.
DJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Company of Heroes Opposing Fronts and Supreme Commander Forged Alliance, and I've been playing a little bit of CNC3 and World in Conflict, actually, for a column I'm working on. And I am, and of course, I've been, you know, as I said, been going through Half-Life 2. In all of its episodic forms. And I played through Portal, and
I've
I jumped into Team Fortress 2 for a little while a couple nights ago. Got my ass kicked because I'm a little bit out of practice. But I'm, you know, I'll get back into it. I promise. Kristen?
I actually am finally, now that the magazine is shipped, I'm just getting ready to start playing Portal.
Portal.
Which
I like
right
Portal.
I'll finish
it is
by,
great.
Like,
it is wonderful.
Yeah.
Being EIC of the magazine is a lot of fun, but it's also, you know.
Totally not conducive to playing games, unfortunately. Yeah. But you know what? I actually have this like wonderful, sort of like, it bothered me and then it made me really happy. I gathered up all of the games that I've put off playing that I really want to play, and I like stacked them all on my desk at home. And I had the, you know, I was sort of, it was kind of overwhelming, but I'm actually really looking forward to it. Like, I think I'm.
That was actually
a
very touching image, I must say.
A little vacation of me, like, of me stacking all the games up on my desk.
Smiling and sighing.
Building a little fort.
That's kind of, it's almost what it was. There's so many of them. So, but I don't know what's more sad, that or the fact that I was like, wow, I should take a vacation week and play all these games, like not go to Mexico or anything. I should play all these games. So it's Portal for the moment, but who knows what'll happen next?
Maybe Crysis.
Yeah, maybe.
I would put my money on Crysis.
Yeah, I think that's just all any modicum of productivity that there has been in this office is about to go away.
Later, Gators.
Yeah, we'll all be jumping into that very soon. Not to brag or anything. Okay, I was bragging, but all right. So that's about enough for us today. We've got Kristen's got to get back to work. We've all got to get back to work here. So for myself, for Kristen Salvatore, for Logan Decker, Norman Chen, and Gary Witta.
Portal. It's great.
Okay, that's nice to hear.
I love that.
We'll all see you next week. And in the meantime, send us your questions at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Go to pcgamer.com/subscribe to pick up the subscription to the magazine. And that'll about do it. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. portal, portal.